Good morning, friends. It's Candace with Autism One Media. Today, my guest is speech lady, Kelly Hinkle. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, Kelly is a speech therapist, and she has an online therapy. And I know in these troubled times, families are looking for help for their children and any therapies they can do at home that will further their success. So Kelly, tell us, and I've known Kelly for a really long time. So, and she's a great speech teacher. She's helped my son with social issues, all kinds of stuff. She even went so far as to have a list of friends that might celebrate Valentine's Day and birthday parties. So thank you so much for that, Kelly.
Absolutely.
So tell us about your online therapy that we can access during this time. And I just want to tell everybody that they can go to thatspeechlady.com.
Correct.
And,
yes.
And your email is Kelly, K-E-L-L-I-E, at thatspeechlady.com. Okay.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, so before we got into the coronavirus, I do provide in-person therapy as well and contract with schools and have an office in Los Olivos, which is in Santa Barbara. But during these trying times, I am doing teletherapy, so that's live therapy online. And as a speech-language pathologist, I work on many different skills. But some of the skills that I work on is social skills, which includes pragmatics, being able to hold a conversation, being able to take someone else's perspective. And with social skills, I use the socialthinking.com methodology through Michelle Garcia Winner, who is a guru of social thinking. So I use all of her methodology, which is evidence-based. And currently I'm seeing two students online who I use to see in person for a social group, and I have a neurotypical peer in that group that joins us, and currently we're working on maintaining conversation, being able to ask questions, being able to make out-of-thoughts, supportive comments, follow-up questions, and currently how I'm doing that is I can privately chat to my student where the peer doesn't see that, so I can prompt the student in that way to help them feel successful in that conversation. Outside of social language online, which, you know, has its limits, but it also has its benefits because so much of communication these days is online. And so it's important not only to be able to have appropriate social skills in person, but also, you know, being able to talk on the phone and teleconference and also message people appropriately. I also specialize in dyslexia, so I'm working on, and the methods that I use for to help those that are dyslexic also help individuals on the autism spectrum that struggle with reading or comprehension or spelling or writing. And then I also work on math. So in terms of the structured word inquiry is the methodology that I use to help with reading and spelling. And that's based on linguistics. It's based on our English orthography, which isn't phonetic or syllable timed. Our English language or written language is stress-based. That's why you, when they teach reading, it's frustrating because they teach you to quote-unquote sound it out. But when our language isn't phonetic, then you're left with a bunch of sight words or words that you have to memorize. That is difficult for an individual that might have processing speed difficulties or working memory difficulties. So one example, and I'm dyslexic myself, which is the opposite of autism. So if you think of autism as being a left brain benefit, right? So there's gifts that come with autism, gifts that come with dyslexia, and the gifts with autism are they're typically sometimes good at reading and math, where the dyslexic brain is more right-brained. And so they are more emotional but and creative and problem solvers, but not so great with the math and reading. But one example that hit home for me is I always struggle with spelling the word diarrhea. And I couldn't spell it to save my life. I couldn't spell it for spell check to even pick it up or word prediction. But once I've studied with multiple different linguists, our English orthography, D-I-A means through. Similarly, like diameter, if you're measuring a diameter, you're measuring through, means measure through. And then R-R-H is a Greek grapheme that means run. So diarrhea means run through. Another example is the word two, T-W-O. Why is there W in the word two? It is a homophone, so there's T-O and T-O-O, but you know, you wonder why there's a W in two, and it's because it's related to 20 or twist or twine or twinkle or tweezers, and in between, they all have a two-ness quality. So we look at words through etymology, which is the history. Where did it come from? Did it come from Greek or French or Latin? And then we look at morphology and the word, the element meanings, and then phonology. So we study etymology, morphology, and phonology together when we're looking at words, and it deepens the comprehension of what our words mean.
That is so awesome. Let me just say, you're the only speech pathologist ever in my life, in my son's history of therapy, that has explained all these clinical words to me. I had no idea after all that time what pragmatics meant until you told me recently you defined every word, these clinical words. And I have to tell you, that was the most difficult thing for me in the beginning, to follow along with the professionals working with my son, because they all used words I didn't understand. Mm. So I want to thank you for that. You really helped me with that. So
awesome.
My hat is off to you. You're one of the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. I think I think for me it makes a difference that I have four children with IEPs that need service and need a lot of it. Again, similarly to autism, you know, they need intensive services and they need explicit instruction in the areas that they're weak at. And then having my own dyslexia, you know, my kids have been assessed by many different psychologists and practitioners, and those reports are really overwhelming. And I benefit most from examples, like what does this mean and how does this relate to real life and how is this applicable to my child's or my
Yes, and we've searched for that. We've searched for that for years, trying to find out how that diagnosis affects our child.
Yeah. Yeah.
So awesome, Sauce. Thank you so much.
Yeah. I think that makes a huge difference, is being able to be on both sides of the table, be the professional, but also be the parent and advocate, right? So, unfortunately, I think there are many practitioners that I've come across in my own experience with my own children that, you know, they call themselves experts because they might have, you know, a 5-day or, you know, a week training or 15-hour training. And it's still weak. I've done over 400 hours of training in just our English orthography, and that's ongoing. And before that, I specialized in autism. And, there was the workshops and learning the methodology, I'm super passionate about. And it's more than just a 15-hour workshop, but that's what you see oftentimes out there. And I think the more you find someone who really specializes in it, so like speech-language pathology is such a broad field that there are many areas that I won't do, that I don't feel comfortable doing, even though it's within my competency, quote-unquote Cs, the clinical competence. I don't do swallowing. And a few other, you know, more of the geriatrics or infants that I don't do, or feeding. But what I do, I try my best to do it well. And I've added math to that methodology. And so the technique that methodology I used for math is called Making Math Real. And I've done over 400 hours of training in that. And the training, unfortunately, for Making Math Real is a lot harder to find. You can only get trained in Oakland from the founder, David Berg. And most of the math you see these days is very abstract, especially with Common Core. And so,
yes, and that's so difficult for our kids with autism, this Common Core math.
Yeah, so it uses a lot of language.
More.
Yeah, so, you know, even I think it's difficult for most, but definitely difficult for children with autism and then children with dyslexia as well, because both autistic kids and dyslexic kids, it's a language-based, or there's a language component in having that diagnosis. And Common Core uses a lot of language with regards to their math. Making Math Real goes from kindergarten through college curriculum. And it's so sequential and incremental, and you don't move to the next step until you've mastered the foundational skills. So oftentimes I'll get kiddos that, hey, my kid needs to be tutored in algebra. Can you do that? Yeah, I can do that. But these are kids that don't know their addition facts and subtraction facts or multiplication. So we have to go back to the foundation. My oldest is in sixth grade, and we've been doing Making Math Real with him. And recently we had to go back to get some kindergarten skills because he was missing that. So it's, you know, having a really strong foundation is core, but what's beautiful about Making Math Real, it is multi-sensory, and they go from concrete, so you get out the blocks and you get out the certain mat, and you create a picture for what the math means. You have to know what it means. It's not just procedure. And then you go to semi-concrete and then semi-abstract and then abstract. But there's multiple levels before you get to a worksheet. And even at a worksheet level, you know, if you're switching from different problem sets, that takes a lot of executive functioning, altering your attention from one set to the next, like just even paying attention to signs. Is it subtraction or addition? So that's what I have found that works for math. It's the best out there. I know, you know, when parents are Googling what to do about math or reading or social skills, like there's a sea of options out there. And it's really hard to figure out what methodology you're going to go with. And you may have spent, you know, hundreds or thousands of dollars with those methodologies, and then at the end found little to no success. So I've been there. The methodology of Making Math Real and structured word inquiry and social thinking is definitely the best to help with the reading, spelling, social, and math skills. But, you know, the problem is teachers, as much as they want to help, they're not taught at the university level how to teach reading, spelling, or math, and certainly not pragmatics. Or the social skills. And so, you know, just because they're a special ed teacher, you know, gen ed teacher, doesn't mean they've been taught that. And unfortunately, I don't feel there are many administrators out there that really support, you know, this continuing education at a really deep level. They might want to send you to a day workshop where you learn, you know, it's just not deep enough. And so, you know, continued education with the methodologies that are highly specific and proven to work with this population is what I recommend.
Kelly, I don't know if you're comfortable in this, but I'd like you to tell our audience how my son's deficits, when you first met him, how they've improved. Do you feel comfortable doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. No problem.
With my permission?
Yes. So when I first met him, he's had a lot of educational wounding. And so, you know, even to hear why I have to go to speech, like, oh, no, I don't want to go. Because, you know, I was new to him. And in the past, you know, this is at high school level. In the past, he's had a lot of potentially bad therapy or not so great therapy or aversive.
And I've advocated for Eddie for years, and I've tried to do my best with Eddie, you know, and we have been in therapy since he was four.
Yeah.
And he calls his grade school a week. And he's 17 now. But he's the kid that the classroom had to be evacuated because he'd start throwing chairs.
Yeah.
Now, there's several ways you can go. You can put your kid in a special day class, or you can put him in a classroom in general education, and then those cortisol levels will go over the top. So, you know, there's I focused on education instead of recovery because that's how I was led in the very beginning. I mean, I've since. So I lost a whole lot of time in that recovery piece.
Well, he's also pretty sharp, right? So cognitively, there's no way he being in special day class would really serve him, in my opinion. You know, he's certainly capable of doing general ed work and gifted in certain areas. And so you want him to be in that environment. And for him, it took having an aide that was able to read his signals, his body language, know his red flags. And so they could de-escalate him before it gets big. And so my speech room, which I had this big beanbag in, he could come in and de-escalate in that room. But it took some time to build rapport with him because he just saw me as, you know, all his previous speech therapist. But once, you know, I think a key point is, you know, he didn't love to do the mile run. And so I said, well, let's do speech during the mile run instead of you doing the mile run. And so that seemed to be less aversive for him. So finding the best time. And I think I've been challenged with this, with my own kids in terms of the model that they use at schools. So, you know, oftentimes it's either push in, meaning I go into the classroom and provide support, or pull out, where the students pulled out of class. And that's kind of the model you're left with, which I don't really love, to be honest with you, with my own kids. When you're pulled out, you're missing something. And, you know, for Eddie, it was fine to miss that model run because he didn't really love it. But what else do you miss? You know, study skills he still loved because he liked getting his homework done and getting ahead. For my kids who are pulled out daily or were pulled out daily, they kept falling further and further behind. And when you push in, there's not enough time to really hit those skills that they need to be explicitly taught. That maybe they need those foundational kindergarten skills when they're in sixth grade, but how are you going to do that in the classroom? And being pulled out or a push in, you are seen as different by your peers, and then they then treat you that way. So my oldest son didn't have typical friends, you know, for a long time until we ended up homeschooling him, and now friends are finally coming around. But kids know when you're different, and they're not super forgiving at times. And so for me, I had to choose to homeschool our kids, which isn't for everyone, but they finally have their social emotional being back, right? So at some point, like my girls were crying every day. My oldest son said he wanted to kill himself. You know, it got really bad. He thought he was dumb. And so it's like, if we don't support their social emotional beings and hit the academics that they need to be successful, because these are kids that are many of which are cognitively normal. And so if you don't address their needs appropriately and early enough, they're going to end up working at McDonald's or, you know, doing a job that, and not to say there's anything wrong with working at McDonald's, but, you know, I want kids, or once they get to an adult, to be able to do whatever they want to do. But we have to make sure they have those foundational skills. Many of the students that I worked with at the high school level didn't know how to read, write, spell, or do math, and they're certainly capable. They're cognitively normal, but were never taught those skills, never given the appropriate intervention. And the beautiful thing about Eddie is you're such an advocate, Candace, and I think not enough parents are. You know, you have to be willing to advocate for your kid, and sometimes that's not always easy and it can feel uncomfortable. But there's no one that knows your kid the best other than you. And it's important to be your own expert. So with my own kids, I could no longer depend on the school to do that. I had to say, well, I need to be the expert in this. I need to know you know, what they need and how to write these goals and the methodology we need, and I need to be trained in it myself.
Yeah, and that's something I want to stress to our parents. Early in Eddie's diagnosis, I thought that these experts were the experts, and I didn't stand in my power. Mm-hmm. We need to realize that we are the experts. We cannot be intimidated by these people. They do not know your child better than you do. I remember going to an IEP early on to try to get my son into the LEAP program. It was before, well, it was preschool.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going to the county education office, and there were about 12 of them and one of me.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about my child as if they knew my son.
Right.
And I noticed in that conversation that a lot of the things they said were incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a really long time to realize that I am the expert, these people. So we need to take our power back. And that has been the core of what I've tried to express to our parents, that we need to take our power back, we need to stand our power, and we need to, you know, help our kids as the expert. We
absolutely
are the expert.
And it can feel intimidating when you're in a room, you know, and outnumbered. For my case, I had the school district rather preferred to bring their lawyer rather than training their staff, which is all I asked for. And so sometimes it gets to that level too, you know, and there was a time where the lawyer showed up and I didn't read the notice of meeting where it said the lawyer would be there. So I was shocked and I was intimidated and I was like on the verge of tears, literally shaking, but I was there. Like I wasn't going to reschedule. I just, you know, stood in my power there. And it's, we have to be warrior moms. And
that's enough to make you mad and really push back and really stand in your power. And that's what happened to me. I thought, I'm better than this. I'm not going to let them intimidate me. They put their pants on the same way I do.
Mm-hmm.
I know my child better than anybody, and I'm going to do my best to advocate for my son, but I need education. I needed education. I needed to learn special education law, and that's kind of where I went because these people had upset me so much.
Right. And oftentimes they don't know the law, right? So all these administrators, I had a conversation with one just recently about extended school year, and she tried saying that extended school year is just for severely handicapped kids. And I had a reminder, I said, the law doesn't say that. You can't provide just a CAN program. You can't say just it's just for a certain population. That's illegal. And it makes me mad that I have to be so on my toes about, like, knowing my rights.
Yes, they'll bowl you over and they'll gyp your kid of faith. You know, I mean, I hate to blow my own horn, but I've pushed back against them twice and won. Yeah. And a lot of their policies are illegal.
Mm-hmm.
They're not legal. And,
you
know, your kid has an IEP and that's individual education program. And it's suited to your child, not their policy.
Right. And oftentimes on the back end, you know, your speech therapist may oftentimes has a very high caseload. You know, you're supposed to come up with areas of need through your present levels and then develop goals from that and then recommend services from those goals. But oftentimes what they don't tell you is it goes backwards. Oh, I only have, you know, I have caseload of 70, which is way more than it should be. And I only have time to see the student once a week. So that's, I'm only going to write one goal for it. The other piece with regards to an assessment, you have to feel like they described your kid. And if they didn't feel, if the reports of them feel that way, like, yep, that's my kid, then get an IEE, an independent education evaluation. And with that, you have to do your research and make sure it's a good one. You know, you're picking a good provider and don't just pick the provider that the school district recommended, right? Because if they recommended
the law
it,
says
probably gonna,
you get picked. You
right.
have to pick.
But
they'll give you a list.
Don't know that. They'll give you a list, but you don't even have to stick with that list, right? And so even when they give you the list, you have to call and ask questions, ask for sample reports and see how many assessments they've done on pragmatics or autism or dyslexia or whatever the diagnosis is. because it's just because you're an IEE assessor doesn't mean you're a good one.
And I just want to add that an IEE, you have to ask for it in writing, and it's going to cost them probably about $5,000. And
yeah.
They have to do it unless they sue you.
Right. They have two choices, and I've been faced with both. So if they approve it, that typically means that they feel they couldn't defend their assessment in court. If they feel like they've done an amazing job and they've done all of the pieces of a really thorough, good assessment, and they feel like they can defend that, then they either approve it or they follow due process, and I've had both. So for my sons, they approved the IEE, and for my girls, the assessment was over 100 pages per girl. Can you imagine that? And they were like in first grade. And so even though it was a weak assessment in my from my perspective, because the interpretation was lacking, like they over-assessed, all the scores were there. I wasn't questioning the scores, but I was questioning the interpretation. What do you do with it? What does this mean? And so they chose to follow due process instead of approve an IEE. And at that point, I already decided to pull my kids, because in order to have a stronger case, I would have had to let my girls be harmed in the system. And at that point, I'd already let my two boys be harmed in the system. I just couldn't do it anymore. So, but unfortunately, you know, to have a case, sometimes you have to, you know, that's what the lawyer will say. You have to show harm. You know, it really depends on the district or the administrator. You know, when I spoke to my lawyer, he was really shocked with how the district didn't work with me, given my training and background. That, you know, initially all I asked was for teacher training, and I felt like it wouldn't only help my kid, but it would help everyone in the school district. And there was so much ego. That's the hard part about education. It's not everywhere, but where I am, there was so much ego. Like, I am the expert. I know what we're doing. It's my way or the highway, rather than collaboration. I certainly didn't feel like an equal part of the team where parents need to be heard. At one point I was put in timeout at a meeting where they wouldn't give my daughter an FM system that the audiologist recommended because she has difficulty hearing and noise. And I said, well, you know, I'm going to get this. It can either be, you know, easy way, you approve it, or the hard way, but I will get it ultimately. And they made me stay in the room, and everyone else left for 10 minutes. And I felt like they didn't say it was timeout, but I felt like they put me in a timeout. And I finally did get the FM system, but we're homeschooled. So she uses it when she goes to guitar or has any lessons, like at art, back in the day when we could go outside, but we don't do that anymore.
Well, Kelly, thank you so much. Let's talk about your online therapy. So I know that I spoke with one of our advocates in the state of California, one of the best in the state, and I asked her if our IEP is in effect during this time.
Mm.
And I guess that's still up in the air, so
yeah.
We do not know. And I know that a lot of our kids need consistency in their therapies, and they need, you know, we can't let this time go.
Right.
So I want to direct people to you.
Thank you.
And you can do online therapy so that you can email Kelly at kelly@thatspeechlady.com. That's K-E-L-L-I-E. And your website is thatspeechlady.com.
Yeah, and so it's interesting. You know, we definitely have to push back, because it sounds like Congress is trying to get rid of FAPE during this time, whether it's short-term or long-term. It's super scary, so we have to talk with our legislators about that. And I understand that some students, severely handicapped students, need in-person, and that isn't possible right now during this quarantine. But I'm hopeful that once this quarantine lifts, that those students that need in-person will have some compensatory education to make up for that time. And in the meantime, the students can learn online. Like I said, it's not for everyone, that we should take advantage of that. And unfortunately, some districts do it better than others. So some districts seems like they're paying their staff, from what I've heard, but some districts aren't having their staff do much of anything, and others are. They're working really hard in getting virtual therapy and virtual classrooms up and running. But regardless, it's important that we advocate for our kids. You know, we're homeschooling, and my kids do online therapy 4 to 5 hours a day. I can't be their primary therapist, so. But if you are all wanting any private therapy, I do have some openings. I also contract with schools as a nonpublic agency, so sometimes schools do require that when you're asking them to pay for the therapy or reimbursement, so that's a plus there. And if I'm not available, I'm well connected with the community and finding a qualified therapist for you.
Well, Kelly, let's just round this out. I want to ask you, okay, so you said that Eddie was educationally wounded with his therapies in the past, but why don't you just round that up by telling us about his improvement?
Yeah, so now he enjoys coming to speech, and our main focus has been on social skills and being able to have a conversation and just be able to hang out with a peer and for it to last as long as possible. So we've been working on Eddie asking, getting curious about other people and asking them questions about them that make them feel important rather than his interests. And most kiddos with autism have really specific interests. So it's fine that we talk about that interest, but it's important that we make our peer feel good and give them good thoughts. And so another piece that we're working on is follow-up questions. So they said they, you know, went to the beach this weekend. Well, like, tell me more about that. Who did you go with and where did you go? And being able to make the conversation, not make, but help the conversation last as long as possible. And then also making supportive comments. So rather when someone says something like my dog died, not to not say anything or not, to, you know, to make an appropriate comment like, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Is there anything I can do to help? And so I think it was last year that he's in high school, so he likes the ladies, and he was really devastated. He tried to, I think, ask someone out, and they didn't accept his invitation. And anyway, so we were able to help him find a girl that he connected with. And so that's my goal, is that he has friends. I mean, having autism, if it's not treated and worked on those social skills, it can lead to depression and loneliness. And children with autism need friends as well, and they need that community and connectedness. And I just saw him really grow in his happiness and his enjoyment. We also worked on him being in clubs. So there's like a gaming club, and so for him to be included in that and feel like part of the community.
And I just want to say, we recently had a birthday party at Boomer's. That's like an arcade-type place. And there were a bunch of our family coming, and I tried to limit it to 10. So I invited 5 of Eddie's friends. I gave him 5 invitations to pass out at school. And I want to say that 6 people showed up, and they all had brought a present, and they were all neurotypical, except for one. And they all brought gifts, and they all supported Eddie and hung out with him. And these were, like, top-shelf kids, like, super nice, you know, going into the Marines. All of them were bragging on Eddie's abilities and how good he is at weightlifting and,
yes,
and how strong he is and how he's exceptional in his gaming and da-da-da-da-da. But anyway, that was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's
incredible. And I owe that to you.
Aww,
you know,
you.
I do. I feel like I do. So, Kelly, thank you so much. Any last words?
No, well, thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be on your show. And, yeah, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
Oh,
and I miss
welcome,
Eddie.
Kelly.
We'll have to schedule some teletherapy.
Well, I hate to say it, but he probably doesn't miss you. I'm having
know.
A really hard time trying to get him to focus on schoolwork.
Yeah.
So
it's hard routine. I mean, my own kids, like, I don't want to get out of the routine of them doing their work, because then it's just harder to get them back into the swing of things.
Yeah, and, you know, we're supposed to be out exercising. We got a whole bunch of PE stuff. We have, you know, math, you know, and, well, we're into the second week of our quarantine, so we got to get with it. But
right,
maybe he does miss you and all your friends.
Yeah.
So, Kelly, thank you so much. If you hold on just a few minutes, we'll talk, and I'll say goodbye to our audience.
Sounds good.
So for all our listeners, Kelly at thatspeechlady.com, thatspeechlady.com. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a great day. Stay safe, stay healthy, and stay tuned. Hit that like button, subscribe, and share. Thank you so much. Take care, everybody.